Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to Monday's Deep Dive. We're going to talk a little bit of tennis today. We got some tennis. We are entering my favorite time of the season to handicap tennis. We're early enough in the season that, like, you can, you know, you're not dealing with, like, trying to figure out who's hurt and who's, you know, exhausted. It's just kind of a lot of players who are starting to kind of put their form together and compete, and a lot of fun tennis tournaments to handicap. And we got tennis every day this week and for the next, like, 10 weeks. So I'm super stoked on this. We're going to do a little Monday deep dive on some of the tournaments this week, talk a little bit about handicapping tennis and some of my thoughts on that. And then, we'll be back for a special pod on Wednesday. As usual, we're going to go deep dive on a new topic for you this week. But before we get there, Andy, how was your weekend?
Oh, pretty good. It rained ice today here in Minnesota, so that was, did it rain ice in Southern California, or was it just me?
Funny you say that, because it did hail today, but we had like the most beautiful spring weekend I can remember in February. It was ridiculously nice on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's cold. It's not that cold. It's just, it's raining ice, so that's not great.
Less than optimal.
Less than optimal, but yeah, good. There's lots of sports this weekend. I didn't make much money on the Daytona. In fact, I didn't make any money on the Daytona 500, but, you know, I got excited for something.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah. I was invested in it emotionally.
19-hour race.
Yeah, I was emotionally invested in it, and there were some close calls for some guys that I had some high hopes for. Won a couple matchups, but overall it wasn't particularly noteworthy from a betting standpoint.
Every one of my outrights, I believe, I'm going to triple check, but at least 3 out of 4 led the race at some point, and I think only one finished the race, so them was the breaks.
Yeah. Well, at least you probably cashed some winners on the All-Star Game Skills Contest and the All-Star Game, right?
Yeah, I gave some of that back on that over.
I was there too.
Faded the steam, and yeah, boy, same. That was dead. I went to look for some college basketball second halves at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, and it watching it play out in real time, before the first quarter was even over, you knew it was trouble because they were like, you know, lots of blocks, lots of steals, like actual defense being played, and clearly, you know, the winner, at least in terms of staying out the latest and being the least prepared to play, was James Harden, who was like 1 for 9 from 3 at halftime. So yeah, it was
made more shots than Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. That's a good point. Jimmy Butler maybe won that. Yeah, Jimmy Butler was the least prepared to play. But yeah, dude, that was a disappointment for sure. There was no hope of that really making it over once the first quarter was over. So I kind of tuned out, actually. I was like, you know what? I'll watch some movie with on Netflix here. Start streaming a new TV show. So yeah, it was a fun weekend though. You know, it's like I mentioned,
you're gonna say you started a new show or not?
It was even worse than started a new show. I made it like almost all the way through the first season of Ozark on Netflix. Ooh, it's pretty good.
It's solid.
It's really good. Well, I got stuck into it. I was like, I heard this was kind of interesting, and the first couple episodes were really good. And sucked me right in. And then, Netflix does this sometimes where the TV's like season one series, like they have a really great like pilot and opener to the series, like pilot in the second and third episode sometimes. And then they didn't really have an idea of what the rest of the story was going to be. So the rest of the season kind of sucks. But this one actually is transitioned pretty well, I think, into a pretty good series. So props to them for Ozark. Jason Bateman he's a favorite of mine from back in the Arrested Development days. And this is
I thought you were
cool.
Going to say Teen Wolf 2.
Teen Wolf.
Arrested Development was solid.
Teen Wolf 2 is the pinnacle of his career, but Arrested Development was a strong, it was a longer stretch, you know, so you got to give him credit for that. Well, yeah, but it's cool to see him have like a
sort of gifs on, on Twitter, Arrested Development is pretty strong in the GIF game. So,
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, and by the way, if you haven't seen that, that's streaming 101 right now. It's so fun. You can put that on anytime and kind of just go through the whole series, and it never gets old. Anyway, but yeah, no, the highlight of my weekend definitely had nothing to do with sports or sports betting. We did like a paddle to Ballast Point Brewery in Long Beach on Saturday during the day when it was super beautiful out, got some nice sun, but I didn't get sunburned. So I was feeling pretty great up on the balcony drinking some of the outstanding brews from Ballast Point. If you're ever in Long Beach, that is the place to go. There is zero doubt about that. Beautiful spot on the water. Yeah, looking forward to this week of tennis. Let's talk some tennis, man. Or was there any other sports I wanted to talk about? Oh yeah, the Winter Olympics.
Olympics. Yes,
really loving this.
We are on full medal, gold medal watch for several countries, and it's not what I posted, but because I'm ashamed. I'm very ashamed of what I've done. And I think you are too. You played it, but under 10.5 golds for the U.S. Boy, that's going to come in spades pretty easily there, isn't it?
That's going to coast. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what
there's to expect two or three spots where they could catch one, but there are certainly not six more.
Dude, if the U.S. didn't invent a bunch of snowboarding medals to be won, we would be getting embarrassed here. Like,
yeah, if the X Games hadn't merged with the Olympics.
If we hadn't forced X Games into the Winter Olympics, we would be getting absolutely smoked here. Four of our, six gold medals have come in either snowboard halfpipe or snowboard slopestyle. Like, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, what's wrong with our Olympic training programs and all of these other sports? I think maybe the only impressive...
Boy, I wish there was a segue into a Deadspin article there.
Did you see the Deadspin article?
Have to retweet this.
Oh my god, dude! This woman this American woman who went to Harvard and is a software engineer in San Francisco decided, I'm gonna go to the Olympics, and got some sort of waiver to compete on behalf of Hungary because her grandparents are Hungarian. And she spent like 3 or 4 years like training for the skiing half pipe. Okay. And she put together this run that was unbelievably ridiculous. It was like literally I've seen 3-year-olds at Mammoth Mountain do exactly what she did, where they just go back and forth and do this little hop.
I've watched this. Anybody who, if you can handle a blue square, you could do this Olympic level half pipe. It's skating, skiing down the half pipe and then getting to the top and turning around again.
Unbelievable, man.
I love that. And I don't love Deadspin a lot. I think they write some shitty articles, but it's like I do love some of their stuff.
There's no middle ground with him.
I either think it's absolute garbage or it's something I'm super interested in. And absolutely, this one falls into the latter. And it's interesting because, like, you needed to be top 30 in a certain amount of events during the season. So she was going to the events that nobody else wanted to because there'd only be like 18 people there. And then, there'd be people legitimately trying tricks. They'd crash and they'd finish behind her. It mattered. And she'd get, 17th out of 18. And after just skiing down a half pipe very slowly. And then she did that enough times where she had
qualified. It's crazy.
The qualifications to go to the Olympics. This isn't one of those feel good stories you see.
No.
On NBC. I don't think they're excited about this.
You nailed it. There are two aspects of this that are just insane. One is that literally people who have spent their entire lives qualifying for the Olympics and who are literally the world's best. Like, they must be just absolutely pulling their hair out seeing this. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Some
Rando.
Yeah, some not just rando, but like somebody who was who had the financial, like, you know, who was financially capable of like putting their software engineering career on hold and spending enough money to travel around the world to qualify for this and can't do a single freaking trick, like, gets to say I went to the Olympics, and that's true.
Yeah, no, then, I mean, these are the kids that were yeah. up at 4 a.m. when they were seven yes. years old to go Seriously. Hit the to go hit the rink and be a great figure skater. And this is just you know what would be neat? To scam my way into the Olympics.
Yeah. And on the other part of it that was just priceless, that was the pull your hair out part. Like, holy shit, like, what a perversion of the intent of all of this. But the part that was just priceless was the announcers knew it was coming. And rather than just poo-poo it and shit on it, they took it, like, super seriously and called it like she was actually trying to do a run. It was so funny, man. They just played it completely straight, and oh, it was absolutely perfect. So we'll tweet that out. You guys give it a good laugh, and it was the both the highlight and the lowlight of the Olympics so far. And yeah, with that, we head into ice dancing tonight with our with two, you know, two relatively large wagers at stake, both in the same, you know, in the same event effectively. So I effectively have two units on the Canadians to win the ice dancing tonight with both my French gold under and Canada gold over basically hinge on this result going to Canada. I'm nervous, man. My Canada gold update, by the way, I think they're at 4 right now. And so we have zero margin for error. I'm looking for under 5.5.
Oh, you're talking the French.
French. There were two goals they got in biathlon in 2014 that I thought were going to be extremely tough to repeat. The French guy did it. The second one came down to a photo finish, for Christ's sake. And after 15 kilometers of cross country skiing and shooting, it came down to a photo finish, and the French guy won. I was like, you got to be shitting me. And then the worst one so far, and this was like, I was up super late at night watching the snowboard cross, you know, where they start six at a time and they just race down the course and they're taking the turns and people are wiping each other out and stuff. It's fun to watch. And I was watching the prelims and I was like, this is great. I love this event. This is so fun. And then in the semifinals, this French guy gets wiped out at like one of the key turns in the race. Two guys get out way out ahead. They finished first and second. And I'm literally like, oh, come on. Somebody finished third and knocked this French guy out, because he was pretty fast. And sure enough, he like comes snowboarding down the course. 2 minutes later, he was the third guy across the line. Three guys qualify for the final. So he makes it into the final. And then he wins wire to wire in the final. Everybody else wiping each other out. And this French guy is like in the most random sport where, like, you know, luck has everything to do with how you finish, and he freaking won gold. And I was like, you gotta be shitting me. I hate this event now. So there were four French golds so far. Two of them were like by the hair on their French faces, and we now only have a margin of two to keep this
I wanted part of this French one. I thought it was tighter than you did.
I'm nervous.
Although I did join nervous. You know, shout out to Money Mark Mills. I don't even know if I did that right.
Yeah,
Money Mill Mark. The Mill. I have trouble with that one. The Mill for the Canada over 8.5, because he's nervous. Oh, yeah. I am not.
You think it's good?
Easy.
Okay. They're at 6. They need 3 more, right?
Yeah, I got them penciled in for about 11.
Okay. Wow. Okay. All right. What do you think? What are the three most confident Canadian golds you see coming up?
Well, the men's curling, and I think the women's curling has really turned it on the last few matches. They have three left in the pool play, and they're looking fit on the sheet of ice, or whatever you call it. Is there a name for that? Where they play? The pitch?
The shuffleboard? I really don't know.
Yeah, I'm penciling him in for, you know what, women's hockey. I'm just going to give it to him over the U.S.
hockey, okay.
Okay. That should be, that'll probably be like a, there's probably odds out for that already, and but there probably will be by the time we get this on the air.
It's going to be, that's going to be,
it'll be a coin flip. Narrow. But I'm giving them a slight advantage. I think they probably can get both curling medals. And then I really, the sharp girl for on the half pipe. She's a favorite. And I think
she is good.
I think that one, you know where the second favorite is from?
No.
France.
No.
Yeah. So have fun with that.
Oh no. Oh my God. So there's going to be two Canada versus French head to heads, basically.
Yep.
Oh man, this is brutal.
That's not a ton of fun.
Brutal.
They have a good shot in a couple others. You know, I'm a couple other things.
I'm just going to put the white flag up. The Russians have been so bad in this Olympics that basically every other country is going over except for America. Basically, America and Russia have taken enormous steps back for whatever reason in this Olympics, and every other country is just claiming all the hardware. So everybody else is going to go over. Let's see here. Oh, you know what? Speaking of going over.
Oh, and ice dancing. Damn it. They're getting Tessa Scott tonight.
Okay. I hope that comes through. Speaking of over, though, I forgot about one of my favorite parts of the weekend. The national anthem over at Rough and Rowdy 2 by Big Cat. That was outstanding. Yep. That was so fun. That was I opened an account at my bookie specifically to bet that prop. Maxed it out, and Big Cat came through for us, giving us an outstanding rendition of the national anthem. Although I think he missed one word that was pretty funny, but I can't really remember. The national anthem
better than Fergie.
Much better than Fergie. It was the number one national anthem of the weekend, although I didn't listen to the national anthem at Daytona 500, but I'm going to power rank it number one. Came in over. I was timing it, watching it live. I stopped the clock at a minute 32 because I had like over 86 seconds or something, and it got steamed all the way up to like 91 seconds. And I'm celebrating on Twitter. We were talking about it in the chat, and my bookie graded it a loss initially, and I was like, what the fuck, this is ridiculous. And I get on, and I God knows why I'm even paying attention to this on a Friday night at my computer, but here I'm getting on and I'm like trying to chat up the service person, like, this has been a misgraded prop, I need you to reevaluate this. I'm just being a total asshole, but they came through. They looked at it, they regraded it. They originally tried to tell me that the anthem only lasted a minute and 17 seconds, and I was like, that's not even close. And they went back and took another look at it, regraded it to a win. And so now I'm betting at my bookie. And while I don't love the odds, it's always good to have another out. And I appreciate them for being taking the L on the on this prop. Basically gave anyone who wanted to bet at my bookie $300, which is...
Yeah, we were joking between... I didn't max it out on the Super Bowl, but I guess I did bet, like a half unit on three different times under on Pink's rendition at the Super Bowl. I've made a few hundred dollars on the anthems in the back. And it's funny, we had a good laugh, we're killing it on anthems, but sports is sports and sports betting is something else. If there's an edge, I guess money, it spends the same.
Dude, we're coming up on the end of February here. You could have a net positive month thanks to anthem props.
Anthem props.
Anthem props came through. And the Olympics, by the way.
Yeah, it's been a good few weeks for the national anthem.
I tailed Mill on a couple of these Olympic props for just kind of small potatoes, but he's hit some big ones, man. TJ Bloman in the 10K speed skate was like 5-1 for me. Yep. He hit the Canadian bobsledders who tied the Germans. That was nice. There was a third one too that he hit.
Had him a little nervous about that. Did it cash though? Because it was a tie.
I think he had to go
double check again.
Because I was nervous too. Because I woke up and I just like kind of half-eyed, like looked at the results and I saw them at the top of the middle and I was like, oh great, they won. And then I saw the recap later when I was trying to post it to the Telegram and I was like, oh shit, they tied. And then I just had, I didn't know what the rules were, but thankfully graded a win. So good stuff, guys. Mill, the Olympics handicapping oracle. I love it, man. We ready to talk some tennis?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk some tennis. I'll set this up here. The football season is over. NBA is on hiatus. As far as I'm concerned, NBA is kind of on hiatus until the playoffs, you know? I mean, like, it's so random from now until the playoffs, just because of who's trying and who's, you know, who's got the, you know, the desire and who's trying to tank, and, you know, the pace of these games is very difficult to predict. So right away, I'm probably going to scale back from like 5 plays a day to like 3 and try to play fewer over unders unless I see a pretty obvious bust. But all that lends itself to maybe my passion for sports betting in tennis, which is relatively young. A little bit of history. I used to watch and bet slams regularly, especially in the summer. Loved betting the slam, the French Open and Wimbledon and the U.S. Open every summer for as long as I've had sports betting accounts, so going back to like the 2000s. But I had never really watched or bet any tennis outside of a slam until about 2015. And then I started getting the feeling like, okay, like I wasn't doing well enough in college basketball to really get serious about that. There was too much, too many moving parts, too much turnover year over year, too much randomness that I couldn't capture. So I just decided, you know what, I need a new sport to really focus on. Got into tennis, and I could not be happier. This is a great passion for, a great outlet for handicapping. And here's a couple of reasons why. One, it's person versus person. You're not accounting for multivariables across a team of who's fit, who's peaking, who's trying to rest, who's experimenting. It's literally, two men or two women on the court, fighting it out for a victory. there are lots and lots and lots of ways to bet it. You can bet outright winners. You can put parlays together between outright winners. Match winners. You can bet the outright on the tournament. You can bet the handicap on a game. You can bet the total number of games in a match. And so there's this whole variety in this whole world of kind of finding edges and keeping, keeping the offseason, the football NFL offseason interesting.
We've mentioned that too before. It seems like they complement each other as far as, I mean, there is tennis well into November. Good tennis, yes. but it does seem like after the U.S. Open, and I know it's the same with you, after the U.S. Open, it just kind of, it starts to fade a little for me as football ramps up, and then really there's just garbage in most of December.
Yeah,
100%. Not really anything to talk about. And then once tennis actually does ramp up again, you're into the NFL playoffs where there aren't quite as many NFL games anyway, so it's nice that there's, that's sort of slowing down by the time the Australian Open rolls around. I mean, you're completely done with college football at that point.
Yeah, 100%. We talked about the Aussie Open. I had a great, great, great Aussie Open. It was better than I did the last two years. It was super fun. I'm happy right now because Bellucci just won this tiebreaker over Fognini, and now hopefully Fognini packs it in. I wasn't really like kind of cranking out a lot of tennis content then, just because NFL's king, and a lot of my focus and a lot of my attention was kind of geared towards NFL in January. But now the NFL's over, and guess what, Andy? You made this point today when we were setting this up. Tennis is on
every damn day.
It's on all it, and it's packaged in a way that is ideal for podcasting, ideal for kind of keep getting it into your routine and finding a rhythm. And right now we're in the part of the season where the tournaments are a little smaller, not as much prize money.
And they're spread out all over the world. It's just like if anybody who bets on European soccer, European basketball, anything European, hell, even, you know, there's auto racing over there. There's tournaments that are going on. You know, the women are playing in Hungary. There's some men that are playing in France. Those, that stuff's right away in the morning. Like, you've got, if you want to bet on tennis all day long, it's a pretty sweet deal. So you've got the European tournaments in the morning, and then you've got the stuff that's in North and South America. Like, right now, they're playing a tournament in Florida, a tournament in Brazil, and then there's even some smaller tournaments kind of spaced out. I think the littler ones are done right now. There's no action. But, yeah, they're playing in Rio de Janeiro and down in Delray Beach, Florida.
Yeah. And that's that in and of itself is cool because there's not just tennis on all week. There's tennis on all day. Like, you wake up in the morning. First of all, if you handicapped and bet Marseille in France, you wake up in the morning and a couple results are already in. So you get the little wake and cash buzz. Then there's, you know, kind of all throughout the morning, there's action in Dubai. Right now, there's action in Dubai, action in France, and then that transitions right into Delray Beach in Rio. And then, these matches in Delray Beach are going to go, you know, till, you know, right into prime time. So it's a full day's worth of action. It's a couple other things that really make it fun, for me at least, is that the product is fun to watch for me on Tennis TV. Tennis TV is like an annual subscription of like $99 or something, and they broadcast every match from every one of these, I won't say everyone because we actually got into a fight about this. Not a fight, but like we were disappointed at what was available this particular week. But there's just tons and tons of live and recorded games or matches to watch to get a gauge on the form of the players and the kind of conditions that exist. Like, you tune in for 5 minutes at the Rio match this morning, and you could immediately tell that it's hot there today.
Like, it looks crazy hot.
They're swimming. Yeah, they're swimming in the summer heat in Rio right now, and you can kind of use all that to factor in.
There was a good discussion on the. Y'all remember when the Olympics were there and they built a really nice tennis facility? Yeah, they don't even use that.
No,
they play in completely different courts. I love how like Olympic villages become just ghost towns.
Oh, it was so dumb. They built hard courts, and they have the venue for Rio is awesome, and that again. You know, this goes back to one of the things I really love about tennis capping is you get kind of this experience of getting to travel around the world and seeing all these different venues. This venue in Rio is one of the best on tour. They're right in the shadow of Sugarloaf Mountain. It is just a spectacular place to, you know, to get the live shots from. I absolutely love it. So a little bit of a setup here on the tour itself. There are four majors. We talked about this on the Australian Open podcast, and maybe we'll repost that this week if you want a little bit more of an intro to tennis betting. But, you know, there's four majors. Australian Open is in January. The next major isn't until Memorial Day, French Open. In between those two is the most profitable time of the season for tennis betting. After the French Open, it gets a lot tougher because players are starting to get tired. Players are starting to accrue injuries. Guys are changing surfaces, and you don't necessarily know who has focused their game to succeed on grass or on hard towards the middle part of the season. And so it takes, you know, there are weak transition weeks where you just get hammered, right? Right now is not one of those times, in my opinion. Right now is the time where people are relatively fresh. They're all trying to accrue points, increase their rankings. The middle to top guys who are playing in tournaments without the absolute best in the world are all eyeing titles. They're like, well, I'm going to get some titles here. I'm going to pick up some hardware. I'm going to scoop some major points so I can increase my rankings. And, you know, and so there's, you know, it's easier to suss out motivational angles. It's easier to figure out who's in shape and who's not. It's easier to figure out who's injured and who's not. And so we enter this part of the season here where we're going to be previewing here some of these tournaments over the next 4 or 5 weeks. This week, starting with kind of, in my opinion, at least the premier tournament of the week on the men's side, which is Rio de Janeiro. Next week, we'll have Acapulco, Mexico is my favorite.
I do like some Acapulco.
Dubai also exists next week, and that's not as interesting of a tournament, even though the cash prize for Dubai is enormous for the level of tournament it is. But the field even, is usually a little underwhelming.
With the women's tournament there this week.
Yeah, they give a lot of money, but for whatever reason, it's still tough to draw the top competition. The women's in Doha last week. And this is maybe a worth a little side note. I don't handicap the women's tennis outside of the majors, but I'm questioning why I don't right now because the product is so entertaining. Like, the women are absolutely kicking ass this year in terms of putting together a watchable product. And there are, any given tournament, there are 5 or 10 women that all have a legit shot at hitting the title.
It's like the opposite of the NBA on the women's
tournament.
It's never like, oh, the favorite's going to roll through this tournament. There are, especially, there was only one women's tournament last week. There wasn't a ton of injury or fatigue at this point in the season. So I think it was like 9 out of the top 10 women were there, and it was a dogfight. It was a really good tournament. And boy, and another thing, I mean, just looking at like my tennis experience, these women all have fantastic Instagram accounts. Almost
they
everyone
are. They do. They're on point.
One of my favorite things to do when I'm deciding whether to back one or not is kind of take a look at their Instagram, see what they're up to that week. Little deep dive handicapping. what's going on at the beach in in Dubai?
That plays an important factor. Period. I think because you have to figure out motivational factors for these players in these tournaments, right? Like, is this guy in Rio to get a check and a vacation, or is he here to win a title? Like, you have to kind of formulate your opinion on that before the tournament starts, or else you're going to find yourself putting, you know, somebody in a parlay, a money line parlay, because you think, oh, well, they're a safe play. But in reality, he's ready to pull the ejection on the whole tournament because he's got his paycheck and he wants to spend some time with the, you know, with the models and at you know, Ipanema Beach or whatever in Rio. So, you know, it's critical to kind of know what's going on with the players and follow, you know, people's Twitter feeds who are part of tennis Twitter, who are kind of keeping track of that stuff for you and following their Instagram accounts and seeing, like, you know, oh, it's Sunday night and, you know, Sibby's at the, you know, at the the hottest club in Dubai. Like, she's probably not here to win this week. You know, I mean, it's something that you absolutely have to fold into this. You know, I love starting my week kind of thinking about each player's arc in terms of how they're approaching the tournament, in terms of And there are kind of like 4 factors. Like, are they there to win? Actually, I'm gonna go so far as to say there's like 4 categories of player heading into any given kind of week long smaller tournament. All right. First category is
I've never heard this. This
is brand. Yeah. Okay. And I don't even have this written down. I'm freestyling this from the back of the old gray matter here. There are a handful of players who are there who believe they have legitimate shot at winning, right? And those are the guys that you want to look for saving kind of their best stuff for later in the week, right? They're not going to go out there and just drop hammers in round one and round two. They're going to kind of scrape by. You're going to think, wow, that's weird. Why, you know, he's a lot better than this other player. How come he only, you know, how come he won 2-1 instead of 2-0, right? Or how come this guy went to tiebreak versus this player? He's a lot better, right? And so there's guys who are legitimate contenders for the title who are going to try to save it up earlier in the week and then come on late, right? The next class is there are guys who are up and coming players who get a good draw and have a chance to make a little bit of a run. And they're going to accrue points on this run, and they're going to win some money on this run, and they're going to make a name for themselves, right? And if you can identify those players, at Rio last year, there was a guy named Casper Ruud. That was his coming out party, right?
It's funny. We had somebody had asked about the difference between – we talked about outrights, and, I mean, just – I love outrights. But someone had asked about doing a rolling open parlay with someone rather than outright. And sometimes that pays off. And I went back to find the one I did in Rio last year on a Dominique. Dominique
team. I was on team two.
Team. And it's funny, some of the tweets right around it and like the threads between you and I, it was heavy Kasperud. There was a lot of Norwegian flags. That was, we didn't even know it. We were falling in love with Kasperud, who honestly didn't have the greatest end of the year, I suppose, but he was something in South America.
Yeah, you could have said the start of the end of his season was Rio last year, but he's back this year and he's playing tomorrow. And I'm definitely tempted to get on him tomorrow to repeat a little bit of his magic here. And you know, and actually, let's put a pin in this and circle
back
on.
What are your two other things?
Okay, so the third category I look for is a guy who is exactly like Casper Ruud. He is coming back to repeat his magic. He has a good feel for the venue. He has a good feel for the surface. He's good on this in this specific condition, this time of year. And oh, by the way, he's defending points. And defending points is something that some people really think is important and some people think is nonsense. I am in the former camp. I think that with certain players' rankings, like if you are in kind of the 16 to 75 world ranking, you care so much about your points, it's ridiculous. Because as you get down to 75, now you start to have to play qualifiers to get into the good events. And playing qualifiers is absolutely brutal. No better way to ensure you won't make a deep run in a tournament than having to put, log miles qualifying for the tournament, right?
Yeah, I'd say almost all of them. It's you got to win three matches to get in.
Right. So, and dude, two or three matches to get in, and that's hard, right? And so, not just the majors, but we're talking about like every other, kind of all along the week. Like you have to, you're either
only and not all playing that, you have in to the lesser tournaments.
Like, you have to get there early.
Instead
of
getting to start play on Monday, you're showing up Friday, Saturday, and playing two or three extra matches just to get into the first round of a tournament to start and that's where you get paid.
Yeah,
you got to get in to get paid.
You're not getting paid on the qualifiers. You're not getting paid unless you qualify and you play in that round one match. And it's a grind. I mean, it is. If you're playing qualifiers, there are lots of very good tennis players who can't hack it qualifying. They just drop down to the challenger circuit, which is like the next tier below ATP, pays a lot less, but that's a lot. It's a lot more lucrative in terms of kind of getting paid and getting an opportunity to kind of showcase your game and improve your game. So it's, if you're on the qualifier challenger bubble, you care a lot about defending your points when you have them. I don't know if Casper Ruud necessarily fits that profile this year because he just doesn't have many points, period.
In case somebody did he explain, defending points. defending points. Like, there's a certain amount. Bigger tournaments give more points. At 2,000 first slam, all the way down to the worst is 250 on the ATP.
Yeah.
It's different. It's different on the women's tour, but generally, the further you go in a tournament, the more points you get. Obviously, it's just really self-explanatory. If you win a tournament, you get a lot of points, and then it's a rolling calendar year on points, and you have to. If you do worse in the same tournament or don't play it at all the next year, you lose all those points.
Right. The clock resets on the calendar year. Yeah. Right. Exactly. The clock resets on the calendar year. And so if your ranking is being propped up by particularly good performances at a couple of kind of medium sized tournaments, you absolutely have to go back and kick ass in those tournaments or else you can all of a sudden look up and find yourself having to qualify for stuff and getting terrible seeds for stuff, And so I say kind of 16 to 75, like the 35 to 75ers you're worried about sliding out and having to qualify. The 16 to 30ers are worried about losing their ranking and having to have, very tough draws or very poor seeding in the majors. And so those are the kind of players that you want to, I think, be conscientious of defending points. And that's like the third category of player guy who's coming in, who's dangerous. He may not be in form. He may have sucked his last tournament. People may assume he's going to suck again, but oh, by the way, he is going to completely sell out everything he's got in order to get you know, to try to maintain these points. And, you know, maybe that doesn't mean that doesn't translate to winning matches, but you're at least going to get an honest effort out of these guys. They're going to get you overs. They're going to cover handicaps, things like that. So that's the third category. And then the fourth category are guys who showed up for a paycheck. And sometimes it's guys who are playing fine, but they just got a shitty draw and they're like, whatever, I'm going to lose round one. I'm going to get paid and then I'm going to do whatever I want here. Sometimes it's guys who are at the top half of the draw who are literally like, well, I'm going to fuck around and like try to improve this part of my game here. I don't really care about, you know, X, Y, and Z trying to win. And you know that you get, you, and sometimes it's guys who are on the very tail end of their career, who have little to no business being in the draw at all, except they're holding on to ranking points from the year before. So they got in. And if you can find a, kind of circle those guys, they make for great fades early in the tournament, especially. So those are my four categories. I kind of try to kind of mentally put players in when I look at the draw round one before the tournament starts and just kind of get a sense of, okay, this is how this guy's coming in. This is the likely arc we're going to see. Yeah, team fits the you know, 1 in 3, I think. He is a guy that has a realistic shot at winning this thing. He's the best clay court player in this field. And he won last year, so he's defending 500 points. And so if he, you know, he just came off a win in Buenos Aires. It wasn't a particularly impressive field there. He kicked everybody's ass. He's kind of coming into his, he's coming into his form. Yeah, and he's coming into good clay form. I think, you know, so just kind of another step back. We're in
deep breath.
Why are we playing on clay? So this is a funny part of the season where the tour kind of splits up. Some people who are better at playing indoors and on hard court stay in Europe. Some people who are better outdoors and on hard court come to North America, and some people who are better on clay go to South America. And so we're in the middle of this part of the tournament through South America called the Golden Swing. Started in Ecuador, went to Argentina, now it's in Rio, finishes in Sao Paulo. And so you have this 4 weeks Golden Swing in South America summer, and you generally see the better clay players show up for this, guys who, you know, who are making their life on tour, winning matches on clay, guys from Spain, guys from South America who are playing out there, you know, in their home countries, trying to win titles at home. And then amongst them is this Austrian Wunderkind Dominic Thiem, who is just lights out good on clay.
Yeah, he doesn't really fit the traditional mold for great red, you know, red South American clay stud like he is. And he certainly looked great last week and would be zero surprise if he ran through it again this week.
Same. So, yeah, so that's kind of the way we kind of look at this all. And, you know, a lot of these players, you know, the better players are going to go from Rio to some, they're going to split up. Some are going to go to Acapulco on their way to Indian Wells. So if we look 1 week ahead, you have Acapulco and Sao Paulo. If you look 2 weeks ahead, you have Indian Wells. And Indian Wells is a great tournament in California. They play it out in the desert, Palm Springs area. Beautiful setting. Great timing, too. Like the time of the matches is awesome for U.S. tennis fans just because it's on like through the meat of the day and into the prime time. Yeah. Thoughts on Indian Wells?
I like it. I liked it last year because I made money, and then I slid that right money right into Miami, and we made money there. I really do love the spring. I seem to do better in the spring. Maybe I really gave up after the U.S. Open too because I had such a bad U.S. Open, as I think we all did. But
oh yeah, the U.S. Open was awful.
It was brutal. But yeah, I do love this time of year, and it, you know, for those who do some other sport, it does kind of remind you of like golf, or auto racing, where there's an event every week. And in this case, well, golf has different tours. If you really wanted to, you could probably bet on 3 or 4 golf tournaments at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like that. They, you know, they move around, they go to different places, and you start looking at it Sunday night about some outrights. I put 5 outrights on, and I put 1 for every tournament this week.
Oh, nice. Okay. So let's get to
that. Nobody is. The best part was, there's a set of twins that play women's tennis, and one of them dropped out of her tournament, and I had a future, and I had to do a little research to figure out. I'm scrambling to figure out if it was the good one or the shitty one. And then I had to go back and double check which one I had.
Your girl's still in?
My girl's still in. Yep. The other twin quit. So
good deal.
Yeah, because a lot of times that will happen too, where they'll be lined up to play a tournament and then just, yeah, I don't feel like it. I'm not feeling good.
So who are your picks this week for the outrights?
I'll have to check.
Let's go through the women's side. You have the United Arab Emirates tournament.
Yep.
That's Pliskova. Okay. She's just, as a little note, she is a badass server. I mean, she serves missiles.
Dubai should be quick.
On a particularly fast court like Dubai, you should see her ace percentage skyrocket. You should see the other women, unless they're particularly good returners, have a very difficult time breaking her serve. So it should come down to, can she get a break? Can she win a tie break? I love that pick. Who'd you go for in Hungary?
Hungary
is the other women's tournament, right?
We will, I think, after a little heavier tennis talk here too, we'll have to do a little shout out to some of the guys. You know, we talked about following some people on Twitter, if you want to get into this, people that know more. And boy, between, you know, we've had Kelly on here before, the Big Ten Watto, and Vinny there, the Matter Tips Tennis. I like to look at what I like for the outrights, and then I look at what he posted. I try not to cheat. And if there's anybody that I've penciled in that he picks to, I automatically just play it. Nice. Even though he's been a little colder on outrights, but
a mental consensus. I like that.
Yeah, I trust his. So, I got a little deeper in the Hungarian. I went with Sorana.
Ooh.
16-1. I don't even know if that's how to say her first name right.
She's winning hearts. That's for damn sure. Holy smokes. She is a looker.
A lot of them are.
Go back to your Instagram comment, man. Serena's Instagram is a top five. She's got a top five ranking on WTA Instagram in my rankings, in my power ratings.
You can, you know, to smaller tournaments like this, you can routinely pick, and I guess it's not the smallest Dubai and Hungary, but you can pick, you know, 10-15 to 1 people, players, and especially if you get someone that's at least 10-12 to 1, there's some really good hedging opportunities if they can make you a semifinal.
Yep.
Especially if they can be a favorite in the semifinal. That is pretty awesome. You can start to scalp a little money that way. And then over in the men's, I went much more chalky.
The big one is Rio. That's the 500 pointer. Who'd you pick in Rio?
I don't love him on clay, but I like how he's playing, and I went with Cilic.
Cilic. He is the best all-around player in this field.
Yes.
And he is in – it was kind of a surprise to see his name in the draw, I have to say. He doesn't usually do the golden swing, so he's here for a reason. Now, if there's reason is he's trying to...
I think he wants to improve for the French.
I think he wants to sharpen his French game, too. He played really well in clay in general, I felt like. I didn't expect Cilic to do well on clay at all in 2017. He surprised me. He won the, I'm going to say Istanbul or Budapest. I think Istanbul. He won Istanbul, and he did well in a couple of the Masters. He was a little frisky on clay, and he made it to, I want to say, the quarterfinals and lost to Stan Wawrinka, the eventual runner-up in Roland Garros. And I agree. I think he is here not out of paycheck vacation mode, but he's trying to win this tournament or at least trying to make a deep run in this tournament to kind of sharpen his clay game, because this is the only chance between now and Monte Carlo, which is like the sort of the beginning, middle of April. So he's trying to get a little reps on clay. It's a good pick. I like that.
And he's playing good. In the past three slams, he's made two finals. So
yeah. He's a top five.
Give me 5-1 on a guy in a smaller tournament that plays that well. He's a top five guy.
He's a top five guy. Period. He is a top five guy on tour right now. He's playing extremely well. He's the only guy to take a set off Roger at the Australian Open. He took two.
Yeah, that was a little. I got a little nervy. I didn't want him to do that well.
he impressed. I gotta say, I didn't think he was gonna make the final. He got past Nadal thanks to an injury, but he took two sets off Roger. He's having a good 2018. He's legit. He's enormous. By the way, Cilic is enormous, and he's got a nice strong serve, but he can also move pretty well, that just kind of makes him a good all around player. So we'll see what he does here in Rio. I like that pick. He's the top seed. Defending champion Dominic Thiem is the number two seed. If I had to just pick one, I'd probably say, okay, well, Thiem's gonna try to pick up a second pelt here after winning Buenos Aires. If I had to kind of look down the list a little bit at guys who are going to be frisky here, Pablo Carreño Busta was a finalist here last year. He has yet to put together anything impressive anything impressive really in this season. I could see him if he gets a head-to-head against Thiem, and Thiem is a little gassed after playing all week last week and then through the heat in the beginning half of this week, then I could see PCB give him a little bit of a run. We saw Ramos. He's a decent clay player as well from Spain. Albert Ramos Vinilos. He's a good clay player. He had to go three sets here today against Rodrigo Duarte Silva. He's good enough to probably make a semifinal here against Cilic, or if somebody manages to upset Cilic, then we'll see how that plays itself out. But should be fun. Fun week in Rio. Who'd you take in Marseille? That's an indoor hardcore tournament.
Oh, let me. I'm on three other tabs while you're talking there. A lot of stuff going on tonight. Oh,
I know. It's busy.
This is another one where there's been a lot of contention about how we're going to say his name. Luca Puel.
Luca Puel.
I like to say it's a French name. I go as little as possible. I try to eliminate as many letters as I can.
Well, I tracked down a French commentator during Roland Garros last year to get a French pronunciation, and he said Puel. So I've been saying Puel too. So we'll say Luca Puel, but it's Puel. It also is spelled like Pui, or Pool. You could say it a lot of ways, but I like Puel. You like Luca Puel? Nice. He's on the bottom half of the tournament. I mean, the bottom half of the draw. There's no one else really particularly good on the bottom half of the draw. Stan Wawrinka's there, but he's
looking like shit.
He is really, 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 really in poor form, coming off an injury, getting himself back in shape by playing in these tournaments. Even when Stan Wawrinka is at his best, you can count on him to get upset in a small tournament regularly. He only really gives us his best stuff in two instances. The tournament is in Switzerland, or it's a slam. Like, those are the only two times I'm ever really looking to back Stan, even though it's fun to cheer for him because he seems like a great guy. Taking Puel, which is in his half of the draw, is a nice little look. Puel's got a
– yeah, it's not a big number. It's 4-1, but like I said, if he can get a 4-1, I'm looking at the draw, hoping to get him to the final. Obviously, if you take it outright, you hope you get him to the final. But I loved his side of the draw. If he makes it all the way to the final, you have a 4-1 guy in the final. Hopefully, I don't know what you think happens in the other half, but I'd say Burdich.
Why is Burdich there? I thought he withdrew last week from, or at least he retired last week. Then I thought maybe he was hurt. I was gonna guess one of these other randos is gonna make it on the top half. I don't even know if RBA's got enough of, if his form is good enough right now to go. I would look for a total random like Benetal or something. Like it's in France. Benetal is probably, you know, he plays his best tennis in France. Maybe he makes a run or something. There's going
to
be something.
Yeah, that's a sweet deal if you can get an outright to the finals against somebody at a much lower level than him. Then you can just take the other one, make yourself 3-4 units of free money.
Easy no-brainer hedge.
Easy no-brainer hedges are beautiful. So here's, you know, it's easy to talk about this on a Monday.
That's like the best time to talk about
how this is supposed to go. I have 5 outrights, and probably by Wednesday I'm going to hate all these people because they're going to be losing the players they shouldn't.
Dude,
speaking, which takes us to our 5th outright.
Yeah,
maybe we should be doing this sort of thing on a Sunday afternoon so we can actually get this kind of information out if people want to look at this. But Hyun Chung.
Oh, he went Chung.
Yep.
You went Chung
6.5-1.
I didn't know that's why you were pulling for the comeback.
I had him in a parlay. I had him in a parlay too. So,
oh man,
it was about to get real nasty to start the week. I had a guy. My outright was losing badly. Looked terrible. Hadn't played since the Australian Open when he retired with disgusting foot blisters.
Yeah, that was gross.
We were worried about the, you know, if he would keep those feet. But he got his shit together, played well. I'm not super hopeful for this future anymore, but sometimes that's how it goes with one of these players where they have an early round scare and then they play a lot better. So that's the narrative I'm talking myself into right now.
Cool. Delray Beach could end up being really fun on like Friday. You see, like there's some potential quarterfinal matchups that would be awesome. If everything goes well and we get like Shapovalov, Query, Chung, Delpo, that would be awesome. You could get Sock Isner, which is a little bit of a snooze, I guess. I don't know. Sock and Isner are both going to get upset. I'm sorry. Donald, you know, the top half is pretty bad. Yeah. Milos might make it to the final. This top half is awful. Ugh. Bottom half is good. Winner's going to come out of the bottom half. I'd have to take Delpo if I had anyone. Should be fun.
If that's how the quarterfinal lines up, that'll be a tough test for Mr. Chung.
Yeah, Delpo does a lot of his training.
You got Sam might be a little tired, and what do you got else? Maybe Shapovalov if he gets through.
No guarantee.
Gets through the doctor there, but yeah, this is the one I'm least confident in, but I didn't like the other numbers and I didn't like anybody on the top. I'm not going to be sitting here with a Jack Sock future. Jesus.
Jesus. That's insane. Yeah. Sheesh. No, Jack Sock is the top ranked American player. And, he has a questionable motivation a lot of the time. He really does not impress when the going gets tough in some of these, you know, kind of lower intensity spots. He gets kind of lackadaisical. He's a clown, in my opinion. And in some cases that like benefits you because if you're not taking it seriously, you're less likely to choke, I guess. But he also just loses matches that he has no business losing at a way higher rate than he ought to. Speaking of clowns, let's talk about some single game betting a little bit. Or single match play. I'm all for your kind of overall take of Sunday, kind of looking at the draws, putting a few outrights in. Let's say you put like 3 or 5 or whatever in. That's still, at least for me, I'm a relatively high volume player. I'm playing 5 or so a day. I'm playing like 5 plays on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then maybe 3 on Friday and 1 on Saturday, Sunday, because the tournaments start to whittle down. So if I'm playing 3 or something futures, that's not a huge kind of outlay in the grand scheme of things. But the bread and butter for me for tennis is single match betting. And there are three ways that I'm typically betting, one of three ways that I'm betting any given match, either taking the money line to win, which is the simplest by far, player to advance, assuming one set is complete, are the rules.
Yeah, depending on the book, there are some.
Depending on the book, yeah, there's some books that you need to.
That's a, just with any sport, you should really know what the rules are, because there are some goofy ass rules that people would not think are true. I had a parlay lose on the first leg, and it actually ended up cashing. I cannot for the life of me think of who it was, but it was a college football game where it was like a blue blood program versus, you know, an FCS team, and it was disgusting how badly it was happening. And they ended up playing 2 10-minute quarters in the second half.
Oh my god!
Or yeah, it was something along those lines.
Where oh, I remember that.
The game did not go 55 minutes.
I remember that. Yeah,
so that,
yeah,
that
voided, right?
That leg voided, and the other, and it was actually, I think, a tease or something stupid, but the other four legs came through, and I ended up, I had to go talk to the book and say, you need to fix that. And I ended up, I made money on the play, even though it lost. Because I took them like plus 39 or something stupid.
Nice.
They lost by 60 or something. It was terrible. So, and it really goes, know your rules.
So I like the five dimes rules the best, which are, if one set is complete, then the advancing player is graded the winner on the money line. The reason I like those is because a lot of the time I have kind of in the back of my head some percentage likelihood that the player will retire, and I'm never backing a player that I'm a little concerned will retire, right? And so, like, I always kind of have a little factor, a fudge factor in my head of this guy's this likely to win the match outright, but it's possible his opponent could retire even, and then we'll give him a little bit of a bump, right? So I'm counting on that being cashed if one set is complete. And retirements in tennis, especially earlier rounds when, you know, there are players who are there who are trying to get a paycheck and who are hurt and shouldn't be in the field at all, but they're going to gut out a set and then act like something happens and, you know, give the fans a show, but not, you know, but still take their check home. And so, you know, that sort of thing happens, and it happened today against me in the tennis Sandgren match. So let's talk about then how you kind of, or at least my approach, I guess, and how I handicap a single match. So I start kind of by looking at the underdog and trying to figure out if the price on the underdog has value. And most of the time in tennis, it does. For whatever reason, things are tilted towards the favorites on the money line in tennis in general, right? And that the exception to the rule is if it's a huge favorite, sometimes there's value in parlaying the big favorites, right? But otherwise, sometimes if it's like a -275 to +200 type of split on the money line, for whatever reason, if you calculate a true kind of, or you know, like a use a good numerical model, you're going to find some value on the underdog at +200. It's tough to kind of play those over and over and over and over again and take a bunch of L's, and then the wins come in eventually, and you kind of eke out a profit, grind out a profit. That's tough to do in the long term. So if I see that there's value on the underdog, which a lot of times there is, then my next move is, well, is this guy going to win outright, or is he going to come close? Right? Thinking like, okay, if this dog isn't going to win outright, maybe at least he takes a set. Maybe at least he takes it to a tiebreak. And in which case you can find about even odds or a little bit, you know, about +100 or so on an over. That would satisfy guy lost, but he played his heart out. Almost, you know, he made a match of it, right? And so, tennis Sandgren match today against RCB. RCB recently winner at Quito. It looked to me like a poorly priced match. There was value on Sandgren. Sandgren's been playing poorly lately, but he's had some time off to kind of regroup after his crazy run in Australia Open. I thought he was a live dog today. But I thought he was going to come up just short to RCB. So rather than back him on the money line, I took the over. And that was on cruise control until the third set when something happened to RCB. He got broken down 3-4 in the third set. Game's over, already home, and he retires. So the bet is voided. And that was depressing.
That is the tricky part about tennis. You'll never have a basketball game that goes over, and it's just like, you know, we're losing by 30. We're just going to hit the showers, guys. Then yeah. all the totals are going to void. But for every time that, you know, and it maybe it doesn't seem like it, you do get saved by that sometimes. You know, there are unders that get played, and they definitely get saved where it's clearly over, it's going over, and someone retires in the third set and saves your ass.
Yeah. Dude, Bellucci is being a fucker right now. You see the second set? He was up 4-0 after winning the first set, and they just dropped gave two breaks back.
He's not as good as Fanini.
No, but Fanini usually quits when they're going
good stuff. I didn't even see that. I thought he was going to quit. So.
I thought he was going to quit, too. Oh, that's brutal. Okay,
I love underdogs, too. I love how you say, like, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to convince yourself to back something where – you know, just the mental bias of seeing someone with -250 next to their name. Often that doesn't mean it doesn't mean a ton sometimes. And once you get down to some of the motivation angles and how some people play at certain events, and sometimes you feel like the lines are just there based on the rankings. Sometimes it looks like they're just, well, it doesn't matter if this guy sucks on clay and the other guy's a stud and the other guy is, you know, probably just there to, you know, cash a check. This is what we're going to set it because this guy's ranked 10th and the other guy's ranked 40th.
Yeah, right. Rankings do drive price sometimes, which is not in any way, shape, or form a good metric, in my opinion. Especially when it's players down outside of the top 10. If it's guys in the top 10 and those are real rankings, real meaningful numbers, then that's one thing. But if it's, you know, a 30th versus a 70th, there's the margin between those players is usually not as wide as the prices would indicate. Good example was Ramos and Silva today. I thought that line was not a good line. I thought there was definitely value on Silva. Again, you know, you can kind of approach this, well, okay, Ramos is tough. He's going to figure out a way to eke out a win here, probably. Silva's going to give him a match. And so at that point, it's like, okay, well, should I back the over or should I take the game's handicap? This was my thinking, my thought process, at least. And I looked at the over and I thought, okay, well, the over is kind of high. You're going to need three sets to get this to go over because these guys don't typically play tie breaks. And so it was like, okay, well, if Silva wins the first set, is it possible Ramos packs it in and just mails in the second set? And there's enough evidence of Ramos's career that when things aren't going well in the first set, he doesn't play particularly well in the second set. So rather than taking the over in this one, I grabbed the Silva games handicap at +4. That almost bit me in the ass because he was down a set and a break in the second set before winning 5 straight games in the second set to even things up at 1-1. And then it looked like he was going to beat Ramos until Ramos kind of finally pulled his head out of his ass and broke Silva twice down the stretch to win 6-4 in the third.
That was another part of that parlay. So it was a pretty nervy day.
Oh my God. The wheels are totally falling off for Bellucci right now.
Yeah. Tennis is, it's not for the weak of heart.
No.
Boy, there's some,
you're going to take a lot of losses. There's
some crazy ass swings.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll sit there shaking your head afterwards. Or it's just like anything else. You can't let emotion get into it if you're going to be gambling with money on sports.
Yeah,
they're still human beings out there swinging rackets and balls.
Yeah. So the Silva, the Dutra Silva over. I mean, the Dutra Silva overcashed easily because it went 3 sets, but he also covered the handicap, so that was a nice win. Sandgren over was well on its way. He ends up advancing thanks to the RCB retirement. I backed a relatively large dog in Bellucci here, his home country of Brazil. He had a moment in primetime last year against Kei Nishikori. Do you remember that?
Yep.
He like played his absolute best, loving the eating up the crowd. It was just a hell of a performance. I remember that well enough. he's had a tough year. He's coming off of a drug suspension. I felt like this was a setup here against a character in Fanini who, when the going gets tough, he generally puts his tail between his legs or goofs off or he does something crazy, starts complaining to the, you know, complaining to the judges, etc. Yeah,
what did he say? He said something in Italian to that line judge. It was called her, I believe I'm paraphrasing, but we'll have to check this. And it sounded really beautiful in Italian, but it translated to she was a cocksucking whore.
Yes.
Like he just straight up said that to an official. Like he's a little wild when he's pissy and losing, but he's fun when he's actually trying. He's a very good player. I think you're shit out of luck if he pulls the second set out. I think he's gonna rip the third one off and actually try, but we'll see. It is fun cashing some big dogs.
Yeah, I thought he was in good form last year heading into Rio, and then he just completely tanked against Ramos second round, right? Yeah, he threw his tennis racket and it got stuck in the wall. Do you remember that?
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah,
that was funny.
Super good Jeff.
Middle of the night. No, you know, everybody's cheering for him and he's just goofing off like a clown. So I backed Bellucci on the money line here, expecting if Blue eke out the first set that he could potentially get Fanini to kind of melt down and lose it. Instead of that, he had Fanini down 4-0 in the second set, two games away. And he's about to, and the wheels fell off.
That leads to another interesting point. If you like live betting,
yes,
tennis is for you. I love sometimes if I actually take some time and do a little fun research on some of these dogs, you can find some guys that I don't know. I don't know if there's actually statistical evidence, but sometimes I feel like there's guys that are hot starters and cold starters.
Oh, absolutely true.
They come out hot. And if I can get someone who starts hot and he's a dog against someone who starts cold as a big favorite, if you can take someone who's like 5-1 to win the match.
GoFan is a great example of this.
GoFan's very.
GoFan. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but either way, you know, it's the same thing as like in any other sport. If you take a huge dog pregame, pre-match, and they start winning and they're up and the live odds flip, even if you can get the favorite at, you know, even odds just to get your money back in case it goes up a creek, or you know, you can do a full hedge, do the math and make sure you make 2-3 units on a big play like that. Nothing better than clicking that live bet, locking it in, knowing no matter what happens, you want a couple units, you're up. And you don't have to sweat anymore. You just watch a little tennis.
Yeah,
that's a good call. That's super fun.
It's a good call. A couple other quick nuggets for handicapping for fun for you guys. This Rio de Janeiro match. Be prepared for rain delays. It always rains, and in a rain delay, if your match hasn't started, your bet is just going to sit there in the queue until it gets started. They don't void bets on rain delays. If your match is halfway through, this happens a lot, unfortunately, and it's been the death of so many promising dogs. Rain delays absolutely kill dogs. When your guy is on a heater, you backed an underdog money line, and it gets postponed, you know, for a day due to rain, and the guy come out the next day, like the guy's not the same. He gets run. That happens so often.
Oh, he just gets a shit kicked out of him.
Just gets murdered. Yeah.
You lose all the momentum. It's like you lose all the momentum.
Yeah.
Like a TV timeout in basketball at just the worst possible time.
Oh yeah. It happens so regularly.
Except it lasts the whole day.
Yes.
Sometimes longer.
Ice the shit out of him for 24 hours.
Yeah. It's like icing the kicker. He has to come back after the weekend and then kick the field. And there's cases where, it's not just a couple hours. Where if it's a late match, they call it for rain or dark. Some of these where they don't have, you know, the proper lighting.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, that guy has to go back to wherever he's staying, his hotel room, and think about how he's beating somebody he shouldn't be, and does he really deserve to? Can he finish it? Is he good enough? And he probably doesn't sleep well, and then he comes out and more times than not just bottles it.
Yep. Let me provide two more notes about this Rio for the listeners to help them handicap for if they're getting to get into this for the first time and they want to bet tennis on in this Rio tournament. It's on clay. The players who are good on clay generally do not have the better serves on tour. Okay. So the guys that chose to travel out of their way to South America to play in these tournaments, these are not the best servers on tour. What that translates to is fewer tie breaks because there are more breaks of serve in general when you're talking about players who are not as strong service wise. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So when you're looking for overs, you're looking for three setters. So if you can have the option of betting set overs instead of game overs and get a better price, that's not a bad look. You're not necessarily, there's a chance you're going to get an over with the tie break in a 2-0 match if you get the first set tie break in the second 6-4 or something. But that's relatively rare.
You make it?
Yeah, it's relatively rare on clay.
Are you drinking?
No, I'm okay. The other note I had another note about clay, but I got totally distracted.
It's slower.
It's slower. Yeah, it's a lot
longer slower. Rallies, longer points.
Longer rallies, longer points. But and
better tennis. And
because of that, fatigue is a big thing, too, right? Because they're playing longer matches, they're playing longer rallies. A lot of the times, if they're relatively equal players, the winner is winning 2-1. That has accruing effects over the course of the week. So you got to look for guys later in the week who have played a little bit less tennis because guys' legs get real heavy, especially playing in the heat when it's the middle of the winter. The last kind of note.
It's not the middle of the winter in Brazil.
No, it's the middle of summer there. The last note here real quick about handicapping this tournament and tennis, clay tennis, or just tennis tournaments in general. If it's two guys who are relatively even, and you'd want to do this is a live betting trick that I've picked up over the years. Two guys relatively even, but one guy has an upper hand in the match, playing better, has a set, and is looking to close it out in two. A lot of times you'll see some rope-a-dope action where a guy will drop, a few points, make it look like he's beleaguered, kind of give his opponent some false hope before kind of surging to try to close out the match, right? You've seen this before, the rope-a-dope in the second set, in the third set sometimes, where
it usually tricks me.
It's a complete mind fuck. You see it and you're like, wow, I guess it's over.
He's tired. He's not good. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Where did that come from?
And then he breaks someone to love.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And the opposite is true, too. If a guy just absolutely lays it out, puts all of his energy and intensity to get a break, to either break back to extend the match or break, to get a breakthrough to, put himself in better position. The likelihood of a break back the next set is high just because of how much he put out, how much he expended. And so kind of level of effort in, if you're betting live, by good God, be watching. Okay. Don't be throwing darts live. You will not be successful long-term. I can almost promise you. But if you are watching live, a lot of times you'll be able to pick up is this guy winning games because he is putting in more effort and getting rope-a-doped, or is this because there literally is something that this player A is the better player and this is gonna work long term for him. So those are just kind of the tricks to live betting, at least from my perspective. But like Andy mentioned, the swings are volatile in some of these tennis matches. Clay, no different. So get your best price. Get your best price. Bellucci had a shot there and he didn't come through.
Have a shot, I'm sorry.
That was close, man. Damn, dude.
Are you actually streaming it or are you just watching this?
Yeah, I am. I can already tell you this is going to be a heartbreak. Fanini's going to win this in three. So,
I would, yeah. If you want to live bet that quick, you should probably do that for a little bit.
I'm gonna see what
you
happens.
If you want to go down, if that's the hill you want to die on, is
I know
Tomas
right?
Bellucci.
Tomas Bellucci, cheater, fucking A. All right, well, that was pretty good. I feel like we kind of pulled the curtain back a little bit on how to do all the tennis handicapping. Hopefully, the listeners enjoyed this, and you know, by all means, tweet at us, message us, give us, we're approachable fuckers. You know, we're not going to make you feel stupid because you never bet tennis before and you feel like you have a stupid question. Don't think that. Give us your thoughts. Give us your questions. We'll be happy to chat up tennis with you. God knows I chat tennis enough during the day that I can find some more time.
Like you said earlier too, well, if you want to throw together a list of names of people that,
oh yeah,
like that you regularly would, you know, you look at their stuff, what they're thinking. A lot of guys, you know, they'll just tip plays, but I like the people actually, you know, give some reasons. It doesn't even have to be a full write-up, but some of them will just, you know, a sentence or two on why they love someone going into a spot. And sometimes it's just the price where, you know, this should be a coin flip match, but he's plus 250. Like, yeah, I have to take him here.
I love that. Best resources is our good friend, Big Ten Watto. He's publishing great pieces regularly.
Correct, but
you're going to say who?
I was going to say Tennis Abstract.
Oh yeah, Tennis Abstract yeah, is also Tennis Abstract is the most amazing database for handicapping that I've come across.
When he's not pissing off so local good. Chambers of Commerce, Big Ten Waddle.
Follow our guy Kelly. He's writing great articles on Medium. He's doing stuff for Bang the Book. He is really kind of setting a great bar for North American tennis handicapping, I think. So check him out. Sean Calvert. Sean Calvert is a great resource.
He had a rough go with outrights. Yeah. Like he was winning all of his – he was doing very well in bets. His outrights were dragging him down. And then last week he
– 3-for-3.
He went 3-for-3 on outrights with Fed Dummy and –
bing bong.
Yeah, there you go.
As our friend Lockie likes to say. He went bing bong on the outrights. That was pretty fun.
Anderson.
So check out Kelly. I like Sean Calvert a lot too. He does previews for Unibet. He's affiliated, so take that with a grain of salt, I guess.
Very knowledgeable though.
Very knowledgeable, and he'll almost always have a little nugget in his kind of main body of his tournament preview that gives you a winner at some point during the tournament. You know, like, oh, the conditions here are X, which favors X, right? Like, oh, this tournament in Madrid is actually at like 3,000 feet, and so the air is a little thinner and the balls fly a little faster, and so there's generally a little few more tie breaks, and you're like, oh. And then you see a matchup, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy goes to tie breaks all the time, and the over is only 22.5. Easy. Bang. Over. Winner. And you're like, thank you, Sean Calvert, for that little, you know, kind of half sentence that didn't really even – factor into what he was trying to say, but it gave you that piece of information that you needed to find a winner. Those things add up over the course of the season, get you into the plus money. So Twitter is a great resource for this stuff. I absolutely love it. With that, you got any thoughts on tennis that you want to add to this, or should we put a pin in this and put this one up for the people so they can start winning playing tennis?
Let's just put a pin in it. We'll see how these tournaments hash out. I'll post up a little picture of my outrights so I am held accountable for my stupidity later in the week.
I love it. So next week the Olympics will be over. Basketball will be back. But we're still going to preview tennis for the Acapulco Open. We're going to head to Mexico to give you a feel for what is usually a really fun tournament to watch down in our neighbors to the south. And after that, it'll be Indian Wells. We'll bring some special guests on to help us cap some of the Masters. That'll be fun, and let's have some winning tennis, buddy.
Let's make some let's make some easy money on the courts.
Let's do it, man. Have a great week.